97.1 FM, 1450 KBFI, and 1400 KSPT.
Hey everybody, welcome in. As advertised, you are coming in on the Hot Ticket in Town. Today we will focus in on the race for District 1 Idaho State Senate between challenger Scott Herndon and incumbent Jim Woodward. My name is Barbara and we will open up the differences between these candidates in a face-to-face discussion of their values, their priorities, and their goals for you. This program is live streaming right now, and it will also be archived later on this afternoon at NorthIdahoRadio.com. And as always, it is coming to you on 1400 and 1450 on your AM dial. So keep it right here. This is the place, and we will be right back.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonners Ferry.
Kids are our future, and they need a state superintendent that can strengthen and preserve their educational goals. On May 17th, please vote for Debbie Critchfield for state superintendent because she puts kids first. Debbie has and will be an advocate of local school control. She wants parents involved, and she wants Idaho schools to prepare our students for life's opportunities. Vote May 17th for Debbie Critchfield for state superintendent, putting kids first. Paid for, Debbie for Idaho students, Michael Arrington, treasurer.
Cabin fever got you down? Hitch up the team and head on over to Mountain Traders, a one-of-a-kind consignment trading post featuring quality used furniture, antiques, taxidermy, metal and wood art, jewelry, and more. From pistol socks to fool's gold, there's something for everyone at Mountain Traders, and they've added pulled pork to their menu. Open Tuesdays through Sunday, located on Highway 95 in Elmira, halfway between Bonners Ferry and Sandpoint. Mountain Traders.
What's one of your favorite memories?
That's a tough question. Well, there was this one time I went camping with my parents in a forest back when I was maybe like 8 or 9. And I can remember one night we were laying out in our hammocks and we were just, you know, watching the trees rustling in the wind above us, and we could hear the sounds of the forest all around us. Frogs singing and owls calling and the creek running nearby. It was amazing. It felt like we were a part of it all. I don't know if I do it justice trying to describe it, but I'll definitely never forget it.
Most of us have a memory of being in nature we'll never forget. Let's protect the world's natural places so more memories can be made for generations to come. Visit worldwildlife.org.
Is your current home loan the right fit for you? Rising home values mean that you could have more home equity than you might imagine. And if you're considering a refi, an expertly chosen loan from Loan Depot could save you thousands. Ask about their smart term loans, cash out, and over 300 loan options to find just the right mortgage loan for you. Call now, 866-888-LOAN, or go to loandepot.com. Loan Depot, where home means everything. Rates are subject to change. Equal housing opportunity lender. NMLS number 174457. Licensed in all 50 states.
Keep up to date on everything we're doing at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back in. Say hello and welcome with me to Jim Woodward and Scott Herndon. Thank you to both of you for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Barbara.
All right. As always, we begin with our candidates introducing themselves to the audience. They're free to cover and say whatever is on their heart. And Jim Woodward, we're going to start with you.
Thank you, Barbara. And Jim Woodward, your incumbent state senator, have served 2 terms. That's 4 years as representing the community here. A quick summary I use of myself, Idahoan by upbringing, engineer by education, and then Navy submarine officer by training, and finally a small business owner by the school of hard knocks. So So I've been part of the community for a long time. My focus in serving in the state senate is the business of state government. The primary roles of state government we see all the time. If you look at the budget, that's education and transportation, and then along with a number of other pieces. But I am, based on my values that I learned here growing up in Idaho, I believe in minimal government and minimal regulation. I'd like to be taking care of myself and not having someone take care of me. So that's who Jim Woodward is.
All right. Thank you for that. Scott Herndon, tell us about yourself.
Sure. So my wife and I, Arlene, moved to Sandpoint in 2004. She actually was raised in California. I spent some time there as well, like a lot of people that have moved to North Idaho. And we've lived here now for 18 years this month. It's been a great pleasure to live in the conservative, rural character of North Idaho. We've had half of our children since we've lived here. We have milk cows, and my brother runs Bonner County's only remaining dairy. It sells Pleasant Meadow Creamery at all of our local stores. I got involved in politics a couple of years ago. Back in 2018, I went to my first Idaho Republican convention. Then I joined our local central committee, and I've run some legislation, and that's how I kind of got headed this direction.
All right. Thank you for that. Well, I want to begin, Scott, I'll just keep it with you. You get the first shot here. I'm interested, and our audience is interested. People have asked me to ask about your donors and your endorsements.
Sure. So the donor base right now, as of today, is 358 individuals. If you look at my Excel spreadsheet, but you can always go to sunshine.sos.idaho.gov and see where all candidates get their money. There is nothing hidden. There's no such thing as dark money in Idaho political races when it comes to the candidates, and including individual if PACs are running ads and sending mailers, all their finances are on the Secretary of State's website as well. So almost all of my donors, 95%+ of them, are from Idaho. And most of them are right here in District 1, Bonner and Boundary County. And these are people who just care about our way of life. They care about conservative politics, and they want Idaho to be headed in the right direction. And then as far as endorsements, you're looking at some of our state representatives and State Senator Christy Zitto, Heather Scott, the Bonner County Republican Central Committee, our Legislative District Committee met. That involves Boundary County Central Committee and the Bonner County Republican Central Committee. They met March 21st, and they voted 24 votes in my favor to one for Senator Woodward. And so I have their endorsement as well. And then there are a few. There's a local PAC up in Boundary County. I want to say Hometown Idaho PAC. And then there are others, but I usually don't spend much time on the others.
All right. And the same question to you, Jim Woodward. Donors and endorsements, please.
Oh, I think if you look at the website that he referred to, the sunshine.idaho.gov, that shows just where that a lot of local donors. I also have a lot of support from different businesses, organizations across the state, which those are Idaho businesses, and they represent a number of Idaho people. Endorsements, I have the endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police, the Professional Firefighters of Idaho, the Dairy PAC, the Bankers, North Idaho Builders PAC, Idaho Chooses Life, and Farm Bureau, Idaho Farm Bureau, and the National Rifle Association.
All right. Thank you for that. Keeping it with you, Jim, education, I was looking, I think we just passed the $2 billion threshold for budget in Idaho, and that doesn't count the $350 million we give to colleges, universities, over 60% of our budget. So it's important. And it's important about how this money is spent. And one of the issues that comes up is the issue of parental choice and the education money following the student. So what is your position on that? How have you voted and how will you vote with regard to money not being given to the schools, but being following the student at whatever school they're in?
That's a really active conversation the legislature has been for a number of years now. And so the first reference point is what the Idaho Constitution says, that the legislature has a duty to establish and maintain a free, thorough, and a common system of common schools. So we decided in 1890 that we were going to obligate ourselves to the public school system And we need to meet that requirement. Now, there's no prohibition against adding and doing more. And so we have done that. So for example, this year and last, this year, if you look at Senate Bill 1255, the Empowering Parents Grant, we've provided here in the state of Idaho for any public, non-public school student, a $1,000 grant that'll be administered through the State Department of Education. So parents should be looking for that because that's coming up here soon. There'll be $1,000 there for every student up to a $3,000 per family maximum. I think that'll be administered like last year where there's an online shopping store or online shopping place that you can buy school materials or curriculum, any of that with that. So my going back to the start of that conversation, we have an obligation to do one, and I would like to see us continue to shift the budget for the state K-12 system and get it all back on the state budget away from property taxes. That's what we face all this time, is divisiveness here in the community and all the Idaho communities over funding schools on property taxes. So let's get it back on the state budget and get that part taken care of. And then we can also look at those other programs to help other students here in Idaho.
Just a quick follow-up. Do you have any, or have you heard any concerns that parents are going to feel restricted? You just said it's a government store. You know, it's only going to be certain materials. They can only use the money for materials, and it may not even be materials they want. Is that a concern that you've heard? Is that a concern you share?
I have not heard that concern.
All right, same question to you, Scott Herndon.
So the way to make anything efficient in government or anything else is to have competition. And the nice thing is that the Idaho Constitution, though it says that the legislature has to provide for a system of free, common, and public schools, so the schools have to be publicly accessible, the legislature has to provide funding, it doesn't say that the government has to run those schools. So I think we have a lot of options within the constitutional constraints. If you look at some of the money that's spent on education right now, you go to West Bonner versus LPOSD. West Bonner spends a significant amount more money per student on education with poorer performance versus LPOSD, which has pretty good performance. If you look at some of the top performing schools in the state of Idaho, they include charter schools, very commonly ahead of public schools as far as student performance. So we want competition, we want to look at all of our choices, and we have to realize that money is not the only factor in success in education. Parental involvement, competition in education, and small teacher-student ratios, and literature and good actual curriculum is what's going to be the difference in Idaho education.
Scott, do you think the $1,000 in materials that I was hearing from a government store, which sounds to me like maybe some government filtering, maybe not, is a good answer? Or what do you think about that legislation?
Well, materials, it depends on the quality of the materials. So I can tell you that I'm a homeschooling parent, and we don't spend nearly that amount of money on educating our kids, and they have very high test performance and results. So I wouldn't say that, again, you get into material choices and costs, and we have to talk about competition and then the quality. What are we trying to teach our kids? We should teach them the basics and avoid the non-basics.
Well, it's all about the curriculum, and this is going to be kind of a rhubarb, but it is still out there. People are across America still concerned about Common Core. And, you know, that is setting a federal curriculum standard as opposed to local, true local control. What do you think of that? And what do you believe you could do if you're elected?
So in Idaho, we do have Idaho content standards. The legislature did modify them somewhat this year. When you get into English literature arts, then I'd say we still haven't fully come the direction we need to come. When we implemented Common Core in Idaho in 2008 with full implementation by 2013, we have actually seen student performance drop off since then. So performance has went down. It's come up a little bit since then. It's not where it used to be. And the bill that the legislature passed this year to reassess curriculum doesn't get us all the way at getting rid of some of the poor curriculum in Common Core.
maybe not moving fast enough. What do you think, Jim, on this topic?
Well, that was exactly the frustration of some of the legislators, and that's why the House Bill 716 came about this year. We spent the last 2 years reviewing the Idaho content standards, both parents, teachers, and legislators. And I was on the science review committee subcommittee, and so we went through all of the content standards and came to agreement on them. And there was a little bit of frustration at the rate of implementation by the State Department of Education. And so the result was that the House Education Chairman brought up House Bill 716, and we passed that bill. I supported that bill. We're pushing that along to get the content standards switched over to what we have worked on and come to agreement on.
As opposed to federal standards, is that what I'm hearing? Or
well, we haven't been with on the federal standards for some time because we at some point back before I was a legislator, yes, I think that we
mirrored them.
Yeah, we mirrored Common Core standards, and there was dissatisfaction with that, and so there was a change over at that point. But again, before I was involved in it, but I think it wasn't as thorough maybe or as comprehensive as folks were interested in. And so that was why this time we got all the stakeholders in the room at the same time and sat everybody down, made sure that we were getting what we're after.
Yes, Scott.
Well, I just want to point out that when we're talking about when we look at performance drop-off from 2013, we're now 9 years later, and you mentioned not fast enough. And we have to keep in mind that that is a significant portion of a student's life is the 9 years that we've spent embroiled in not very good standards. So that's one of the downsides to government education, government-run education, is it moves a little bit too slowly. Then the legislature this year thought, well, we'll solve part of the reading problem by adding all-day kindergarten. So that was a debate in the legislature this year. And Senator Thain pointed out, and rightly so, that 10 minutes of reading a day from parents to students actually cures a lot of the performance that we hope to see in students by the fourth grade, whereas all-day kindergarten does not. The performance results drop off. So here we have a governmental solution that would spend more money and have schools in session more, and it doesn't even get to where we want to be. And meantime, students are growing up, and they need to be ready for jobs and life.
So you would not vote in favor of all-day kindergarten if you were elected, if you were given that opportunity to vote on that?
I would definitely look at the research that suggests that the early education that has been a big debate in education lately, that is not necessarily the cure to educating children. There are good books about starting later rather than early, and I think we really need to take the performance of starting later for some students more seriously.
I think you'll see that most of us in the legislature are very much interested in local control. And that was why this year we didn't pass a bill that mandated or directed or covered all-day kindergarten. Instead, we provided additional funding for K-3 literacy. And we allow the local school boards, the elected officials at the local level, to decide what to do with that $49 million that's spread across the state. So curriculum is determined at the local level. And in the same sense, we said, here's some more money to work with. We know that kids need to be reading by the third grade. If they're not, you're learning to read up until about the third grade. After that, you're reading to learn.
Any thought about giving books to parents at, you know, 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, just let the books go to the parents?
We tried that, and that was called, that was a bill 2 years ago. There was a $6 million early learning grant here in the state of Idaho from the Trump administration, and we were very particular in the way we wrote that because we knew that $6 million grant was going to be spread across the state for just that purpose, to provide materials for parents to work with their kids.
So it didn't work, or what? It did work?
Well, that $6 million was not made available because in the legislature there was some fear that that money would be used to... there was the group that was going to administer that money is called the Association for the Education of Young Children. They have a national affiliate that had some inappropriate material and probably is not showing reflecting Idaho values. So we knew that there was concern about that grant being administered out, but that would have come to a local group such as PAFE would be an example, the Panhandle Alliance for Education. And we wrote right into that appropriation bill very specifically, the money that's being provided here is not going to dictate the curriculum. And then we wrote...
The books,
and that at the local level, the collaborative local level, determine what books would be provided and do that with parents, teachers, and the nonprofit, the church, whatever. That was rejected in the legislature because of that fear. And I voted for that, but that money didn't make it out to the public. That money was sent back to the government, back to the Trump administration.
Okay, Scott?
Yeah, briefly on that. When we look at the legislative constitutional authority, it includes actually talking about curriculum and dictating some curriculum, because sometimes at the local level, there are poor choices made on curriculum. That particular money that Senator Woodward was just talking about, actually in that group IDA EYC, they had examples that they promoted of poor curriculum, including anti-bias educational curriculum that looks very much like what some people call critical race theory, and also books on gender identity. So this is an example of where the legislature does need to step in and go ahead and exercise their constitutional authority to restrict some curriculum. Also, just about early reading, and my own family of homeschooling children, and you'll see this very commonly, homeschoolers often outperform public school children, especially on reading, because we don't necessarily start out right away. Some children love to start early. My daughter Hannah started at 4.5 just simply because we were reading to her. And then some of my boys started reading at about age 8, and they love reading, and they're excellent at it, and they're advanced students. So we don't have to apply the same standard to every child.
And that language we put in that bill is exactly for the point that we didn't want curriculum determined by this group, and so instead we put it at the local level. So that was why we wrote that specifically.
All right, excellent. Well, we could stay on education all day, but we're not going to. There's a lot. It is an important issue, and there's more there, but we're going to take a break right now, and we'll have more for you after this.
Looking for a great job? Super One Foods in Sandpoint is hiring with a variety of positions available, with some of them starting at $18 an hour. Apply today at superonefoods.net or simply stop by the store and ask for Steve or Lynn. And at Super One Foods, they say, save time, shop online. Just log on and select your items, then pick up at store or have them delivered to you. Go to superonefoods.net for Super One Foods in Sandpoint.
My heart was racing just making spaghetti. I could have waited to tell my doctor, but I didn't wait.
I was short of breath just reading a book. I could have delayed telling my doctor, but I didn't wait.
They told their doctors and found out they have atrial fibrillation, a condition which makes it about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. If you have one or more of these symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness, this is no time to wait. Contact your doctor.
Brought to you by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
First Responders Children's Foundation takes care of the children and families the brave ones leave at home. Help us help them. These are the beautiful voices of police officers, firefighters, nurses, and teenagers who remind us that we can come together and create harmony and unity. Brave to 24365 to learn how you can help your first responder community today.
Every day, Mark fights retinitis pigmentosa, a blinding retinal disease. But even while his vision is taken, his family gives him hope, because whether he's helping run their business or enjoying time at home with his wife and sons, Mark knows he's not fighting alone. For 50 years, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has funded research into treatments and cures for blinding diseases, providing real hope to those fighting vision loss. And our nationwide community of local chapters provides networking and support for people with vision loss, as well as their loved ones. Because the best way to fight against blinding diseases is to fight together. And for Mark, winning the fight against vision loss means being there for his family. The Foundation Fighting Blindness. Together, we're winning. Learn more about how you can help us end blinding diseases at fightingblindness.org.
KSPT 1400, KBFI 1450, North Idaho's radio.
Welcome back in, everyone. We are talking today with State Senator incumbent Jim Woodward and challenger Scott Herndon. They're here today to encourage you to vote and encourage you to vote for them. Well, one of them. The gentleman who wins in the primary will go forward into the November election. All right. You know, a lot of times for people like me and our listeners, things get confused. There is confusion when people talk about grocery tax elimination because somebody over here starts talking about grocery tax credit, and they're different. And so that's one little thing we want to sort out. Want to keep this short and try to make it short and sweet. So, Jim Woodward, do you support eliminating the grocery tax in Idaho?
I support not paying grocery tax, but I support it in the form we do that now, because there are two ways to accomplish it. Don't pay it at the cash register, or get the money back at the end of the year.
Some of the money back.
Depending. For some, it's more than. You're right that for some people, it's not quite enough. It's a little bit of an average. And so right now, we did adjust the grocery tax credit this year from $100 to $120. And for those over 65 years of age, that is $140 now. A family of four at $120 per person, $480 credit, divide that by 0.06, and you get $8,000 worth of groceries annually. You know, I put an article out there that's been across the state. I've gotten lots of feedback. It is close. It's in the ballpark now where it wasn't before. It was not adjusted for adjusted up. So we probably should adjust. I would adjust it a little bit more myself, but I'll have to get the consensus of the majority of the people in the legislature to do that.
So you don't want to eliminate the tax at the cash register, but you want to provide a tax credit on income tax.
That's
income
correct.
Tax
and it's on the income tax form 40. And if you're not required to file a form 40, then you can file a one pager form 24
and request
and
it.
The benefit of that to the state of Idaho, to all of us as a whole, is that those who are coming here then pitch in a little bit when they're here as tourists using all of the services here in the state.
All right. Same question to you, Scott Herndon. Do you support both or one over the other?
So the grocery tax credit means that we're paying at the cash register and we're giving an interest-free loan to the government for the full year until we get our money back from the government later, and we're only getting some of that money back in my case. I'm opposed to grocery tax credit for that reason. I'm not interested in loaning my government my money interest-free. I'm actually opposed to the grocery tax as well, because we can fund the government we have through other means. We are competing against neighboring states who don't have a grocery tax, so we're losing business to those neighboring states. And also, the grocery tax credit that we've been told we're going to get now, I'm going to have that consumed more 12 times over this year because of inflation and food. I'm going to pay $2,400 more this year just for my family for food due to inflation caused by our government's reaction to the pandemic, in my opinion. I will say finally that people are very price sensitive. Those who live paycheck to paycheck, and I know a lot of people, they have to eat, and 6% sales tax on groceries is greatly eating into their ability right now when they're also trying to pay for higher gas prices to survive.
There's another complication with the grocery tax that a lot of people don't consider, is determining what is food. Do we use the definition from SNAP, the supplemental nutrition? A lot of people, when it's not everything at the grocery store that's going to be tax-free. There are a lot of things in the grocery store that would still be taxed. So that
right.
has to go into this consideration. And for a family of 10 people, they can buy $20,000 worth of groceries in a year. So I'd say that system's working pretty well.
All right. Anything else on that, Scott Herndon? Rebut that?
Well, ideally, before we start talking about which taxes we're going to reduce, we also need to look at how much government spending we're actually going to reduce, because in this inflationary environment, we're going to have some significant problems with our budget.
At every level. Yeah.
Our state spending is actually going down. When you look at the metric, the total spending, when you consider the population and inflation, where our state spending is actually going down a little bit.
Well, except that actual cost of government has gone way up. So of Idaho state government. So in 2018, we were running about $7 to $8 billion a year total financial report for the state of Idaho. Now we're over $12 billion a year. So we are spending more money. A lot of that's federal money, and a lot of that is nationally debt financed federal money. So Idaho is doing more right now, and it is going up significantly. We hired quite a few employees last year, hired by the state of Idaho, over 200, and we saw significant salary increases last year. And if you own a truck this year in the state of Idaho, and your costs are going to go up on everything due to inflation, then you are getting behind this year.
All right. Another area of confusion for the voter and for my listeners is that there people tend to conflate certain things together. Like they conflate residency with citizenship. Just because someone is here either legally or illegally as a resident does not make them citizens. So, Scott, this question will start off with you. How would you treat this issue in terms of medical support? And we're talking illegal residents that are not citizens, whether it's medical insurance, driver's license, paid housing, or voter rights?
So the federal government, one of the things it's responsible for is our national security at the borders and a system of immigration, legal immigration. And the Republican Party has always been for legal immigration. A lot of people who move to this country are great assets to the country. And they are very productive for our economy, and they're great citizens and neighbors. However, we believe in the rule of law, and there are those in Idaho who are not in conformance with federal immigration law, and that's who we're talking about. Yes, they are residents, they reside here, but they're not in conformance with the federal government's laws on how they got here. And if you look at other Western states that have high immigrant populations, those not in conformance with immigration law, they consume a vast amount of governmental resources that they are not paying in for. So we are having to carry the burden for that. As well, the fact that they didn't comply with federal immigration law means that it turns out that statistically in states like California, they have higher rates of violating other laws. And so it is costly to those who are here legally. And so Idaho should ask the federal government to enforce their immigration law. And that's why Trump's southern border wall was very popular with Republicans.
All right. Same question to you. How do we clear up? What is your position with regard to illegal residents in Idaho?
I spent 21 years combined active and reserve serving in the Navy. I believe in our U.S. borders. And I believe that we shouldn't make any exceptions. There's a system to enter the country. We don't need to do anything different than that. We have to take care of the people who are here first.
Well, the whole thing came up on my paper because of voting for a committee that would look into how do we do driver's licenses for illegal residents. And you voted for that. So you weren't voting for the licenses, but you voted to look into it, if I'm understanding it correctly, Jim.
Your statement is correct. I voted that we have a problem where Idaho people are being hit by people who don't have driver's licenses and don't have insurance. And so if there's someone working with a visa here in the country.
I'm talking about illegal immigrants. So whether they have a visa or
if they're here illegally, then I don't.
They don't have a visa.
They shouldn't, and then they shouldn't be driving. They shouldn't be here either. But that Senate Concurrent Resolution 107 said, we have a problem. We better put some people in a room and we make a recommendation. That recommendation might be, let's clean out these people. That might be the recommendation.
You're talking about
the Senate Concurrent Resolution 107, and it specifically said that we're going to make a recommendation within the guidelines of the U.S. Constitution and the principles of federalism.
Looking at legal residents or illegal residents?
Considering all of them.
Okay, so it was also looking at legal. All right, you have something you want to say, Scott, also?
I have the concurrent resolution here in front of me, and interestingly enough, if I wrote a resolution and my concern was an uninsured population, I would have put that at the top of the resolution, and that's not what this resolution says at all. It was passed 28-7. 7 Republicans voted against it. That means not very many Republicans voted for it. The House didn't want it at all, and here's what it says. It says talks about a population of residents whose presence is not in accord with federal immigration law. And then here's what it says. They become integral, essential, and meaningful residents of the state of Idaho whose skills are necessary to a number of businesses. And we say where opportunity and economic participation for Idaho residents is limited when they have no driving privileges. We're talking about these illegal residents. And this was what the resolution was about. The House saw it for what it was. And I don't think the Senate exercised good judgment because they basically voted to say, let's ignore the fact that these people are not in compliance with U.S. federal law. And the intent was that we've got big businesses that apparently are employing them or some special interest wanted them to have driving privileges. And I think that's not the right way to go in Idaho. I think we want people to follow the law.
I also think we want people to follow the law. I also know how to do math, and that there's 21 Republicans that voted yes for that. So we're trying to solve a problem. We're not going to stick our head in the sand. We're going to look for a solution to the problem.
Well, I'm going to say just because some other Republicans voted for it doesn't mean they voted correctly. So I think those who respect the rule of law, and that's what the issue is, want the law enforced. If we don't want the law there, then the state of Idaho can petition the United States Congress to change their federal immigration law, and that would be the lawful route. But we who love the law and think it matters, we don't think these 21 Republicans were right on the issue, and that's why the House Republicans did not go for this bill.
All right, we are up against another break. I can't believe it. We're going to take it right now, and we will be back as quick as we can.
For over 45 years, Sandpoint Superdrug has looked for ways to make your life easier, combining the pharmacy, housewares, hardware, and even lawn and garden in one store. Come in and see their beautiful yard art, a large collection of seeds, and the wide variety of lawn care products, from fertilizers to sprinklers. And if you're not sure exactly what you need, they have an incredibly knowledgeable staff to help answer any questions you might have. Open 7 days a week, Sandpoint Superdrug, on 5th Avenue in Sandpoint, making your life easier every day.
Spring into outdoor living with a new composite deck. Starting at only $219 a lineal foot, Badger Building Center and Fiberon makes it affordable with a huge selection to fit all budgets. Fiberon composite decking comes with a 25-year stain, fade, and performance warranty. Tons of color options, extremely low maintenance, and never need sanding or staining like those old wooden decks. Don't wait. Call the boys at Badger for your free quote on Fiberon decking. Badger Building Center. Post Falls, Sagal, Bonners Ferry, and Kalispell. Or online at badgerbuilding.com.
What was once a place of wonder and beauty is now a dull, lifeless wasteland. Food, jobs, medicine, all gifts from the ocean, all gone. Time is running out to protect our oceans. And without our love, everything the oceans provide can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our oceans. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
97.1 FM and 1450 AM, 1400 AM, North Idaho's radio.
Everybody, welcome back in. We are talking today with two candidates who want your vote next week, May 17th in the primary, to serve you in the Idaho State Senate. We have incumbent Jim Woodward, challenger Scott Herndon in the studio talking with you today. I hope you're enjoying it. And let's see if we can get through these final questions. I have another tax question for you. There are several people now, candidates, that have talked about eliminating property tax and replacing it with a consumption tax, and that we don't need that much of a consumption tax to protect people from losing their homes. Scott Herndon, what do you think? If given the opportunity to vote on this issue, how would you vote?
I would absolutely support that, Barbara. It was proposed and discussed this session in the House, in the legislature, and we could replace the property tax for all primary residences with a 1.1% sales tax at the moment to replace the funding for those local taxing entities. We'd have to work with all those taxing entities, make sure they are funded. But I don't like the idea of property tax because you never truly own your property.
Yeah. What do you think, Jim Woodward?
Fairness in taxation is always the question. And so I think that bringing some more of the burden off the property tax is a good thing. That we've seen our property tax system does not work very well during ups and downs. If you look back at any significant change in Idaho tax policy has occurred either during a strong economy or a downturn. And so shifting some of that away is appropriate. The proposal this year was 1.2% would cover owner-occupied residential real estate. So that wouldn't cover, that would not be of any benefit to the person who's in an apartment or renting a place, a rental house, because
it would help the owner, though, wouldn't it?
No, because it would not be owner-occupied. So that was how that was written, was owner-occupied. 1.2% covers owner-occupied. And so that question came up, and in the discussion, they said, well, how can we make sure this is more equitable for anybody? And so the idea was to add a little bit more to that. I think it brought it up to about 1.8% on sales tax, and then provide that in a different form, which was a larger grocery tax credit. I don't know that it was the right answer, but we're working on it. That proposal came from Senate Tax Chairman Jim Rice. All tax proposals have to start in the House.
Yeah, that's but they law. Get to the Senate ultimately. So if it's not owner occupied, it's maybe more of a business, more of a commercial relationship they have with that property.
No, those are there's different categories of real estate: ag, timber, commercial, and residential. But residential, the way that bill was written, was residential occupied by the person owning it, and so.
Just so I'm going to just, so Scott, do you have a problem that it said owner occupied or?
I would personally get rid of all property tax and replace it with another system of revenue to pay for those expenses. But then the key also always becomes the number of taxing districts that are actually on our property tax bill and whether those taxing districts are both necessary and are they controlling their budgets and their expenses, because that's ultimately what is being asked of we, the taxpayers, to fund.
All right. So, I understand. Okay. Yes, Jim.
My comments on that: property tax is a valid way to tax in some instances. Let's talk about solid waste. But everybody, if they have the same one house on a piece of property, is the value of that house, is that really indicative of how much trash they're putting into the system? No, it's not. That's why the property tax system is not great. A $500,000 house and a $2 million house probably both put out one can of garbage a week. So trying to figure, that's why I say fairness and taxation is so important. So how do you tie the tax to the service provided? And that's what we need to work on.
All right. If elected, what is the first area of legislation that you would support and lobby for in the upcoming session, Jim Woodward?
We'll be back at taxes again, on property taxes.
That's going to be your number one issue next year, you think?
Well, it depends. The legislature is going to see a huge amount of turnover. And so the feasibility of any piece of legislation is based on who's there.
I know, but your number one issue that you'll carry the flag for.
I'm still working on shifting the burden for K-12 schools back to the state budget and off of property tax, because that is a partial solution to property tax to get the K-12 schools fully funded from the state budget.
All right. Excellent. What is your number one issue if elected, Scott?
Number one issue right now is the establishment and the legislature controls what bills get heard. And so the people could need legislation on a number of issues. And right now, if the establishment doesn't hear it through the committee chairman, they won't even hold a hearing on the people's legislation. And we end up with taxation without representation. So I honestly think there's a number of issues that I would address. But if the chairman are not willing to hear conservative bills, then we're going to get nowhere. So that needs to be solved. And that can actually be solved through the legislative process.
Okay. Any other bill that you would support?
Number one, I would not grant the governor as much control as he has during a pandemic that he seemed free to exercise these last couple of years during COVID. I think we saw things that still have clearly not been remedied, and I'm not confident at all that if we had another scare, a health scare, that he wouldn't do the same types of things that he did that, in my mind, were clearly unconstitutional, and the legislature needs to act as a legitimate check and balance to him, and that needs to be addressed.
That is getting into, I had a thought, we don't have a lot of time, Jim, but there was a one-year ban that passed to the governor to that would keep businesses, venues, and employers from mandating a vaccine or vaccination for their clients and employees. And the governor vetoed it. It didn't override, and you did not vote to override that. So what was your concern there?
Well, I want to say first, we made a number of significant changes in the last 2 years in regards to where the power and control lies within health restrictions. So the health districts no longer have the final call. The county commissioners have the say on any health restriction, whether it's a mask mandate, a stay-at-home order, anything like that. We also went into Title 46, the emergency orders, changed a lot of that. That was Cold War era. So, I didn't support the...
You didn't support the ban for 1 year. Why?
The vaccine mandate pause.
Yes.
Because that's straying away from local control. Businesses are private businesses, and that a contract between a business, an employer and an employee, when you look at it at the fundamental level, if you have a single employer and a single employee, you're treading on someone's rights either direction.
Okay.
And so let's leave that a private contract, not business, not government.
And Scott, real quick.
Yeah, that was Senate Bill 1381, and the Biden administration was coercing businesses to enforce these experimental jabs and pharmaceuticals on the people, and they would lose their job if not. And the state of Idaho needs to protect Idahoans, and Senator Woodward failed to protect Idahoans. Two-thirds of the Republican voted for that. And then the governor vetoed it, and Senator Woodward upheld the governor's veto in favor of the Biden administration. And
not in favor of the Biden administration.
But that's
in favor
of the
Idaho
from.
Business and Idaho private contract relationships.
The businesses were coerced by the Biden administration through OSHA and through the CMS, Medicaid, and Medicare services. They were not doing this voluntarily.
I hate to do this. We're up to closing statements. We'll start with Jim Woodward.
Lots of opinions, and we know everybody has one.
All right. And Scott Herndon.
Well, people should check out HerndonForIdaho.com. We've carefully researched the record. The Idaho Capital Sun says Mr. Woodward is the establishment. If you want a conservative representation in the Senate, vote for Scott Herndon May 17th.
All right, that's the program for today. Thank you, Scott Herndon and Jim Woodward. All the best to both of you. Come on back next Tuesday for a very concerning discussion. We're moving away from politics while you guys are out voting. Tune in. I'm talking with Bonner General's lead dietitian, diabetes educator, about the surge in type 2 diabetes in our young people. It's not just grandpa's problem anymore. So until next Tuesday, this is Barbara saying take care and God bless you.